me be the very first to welcome you to Smack Off Week. Let's crack in. Welcome to the jungle. I am Jim Rome. It is Smack Off Week. Broadcasting from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices. Every day, Smack Off 23, this Friday. Not 2 weeks from, not 1 week from. It is this week. It is Smack Off Week. And I feel great about it. Let's get it. Telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. Next segment is wide open. Go ahead. Use that number. Get after it. Follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. And as always, you can still email me directly at Rome, R-O-M-E, at habitate.com. Smack Off Week. Friday's the big day. I've got thoughts on it, of course, which I'll get to shortly. But in terms of today's program, let me lay it out for you. Coming up in about 35 minutes, I've got a writer for Sports Illustrated and Golf Magazine, Alan Shipnook. We'll talk about the Open Championship. And Jordan Spieth had himself a day. What an amazing thing that was to watch. He had it. He lost it. He got it back. We'll break it all down. I will get into that. My thoughts on it coming up next segment. And also Alan Shipnook coming up at 40 past. In hour number two, a MLB columnist for the New York Post, Joel Sherman, joins us. Trade deadline's coming up. The Dodgers have a very, very bad day. Clayton Kershaw headed back to the DL. So if you're Los Angeles and you've got the rotation they have, you've got the resources they have, you've got the money they have, you have the farm system they have, and you're having the year they're having right now, what do? Ahead of the trade deadline, do you stand pat or do you go out there and pull the trigger? We'll get into that with Joel Sherman. And then in hour number three, Arizona Cardinals linebacker Carlos Dansby. First things first, though, it is Smack Off Week. And in the spirit of Smack Off Week, Conor McGregor is letting the smack fly. And that's where I want to start. Conor is letting it fly, except it's not at Floyd Mayweather. Instead, he's going at another smack alpha. Draymond Green, of all guys. Yes, I said it. Draymond Green. So you're probably wondering, how the hell did that happen? How are a UFC champ and an NBA champ spitting venom? Two of the very best of the best at that game. Why are they after each other right now? Easy to figure out. Draymond Instagrammed a pic of Conor wearing a Warriors 23 throwback jersey with the caption, quote, "We rocking with Floyd, bro, not you. Take that off, brah." Yeah, because Conor was going to do that. Because Conor was just going to sit there and take that. Sure he wasn't. And he fired right back saying, quote, "That's CJ Watson, mate. I don't know who the bleep you are. No disrespect, though, kid. Keep hustling and stay in school." End quote. It's so incredible. First of all, I'd be shocked if Conor didn't know who Draymond was. That's why saying he doesn't know who he is and saying, quote, "keep hustling and stay in school," end quote, is so funny. I mean, pretty amazing that a former plumber's apprentice is telling somebody else to stay in school. Except Conor wasn't done. He never is. He then chased it with, quote, "Now, ask yourself why I'm rocking CJ when I don't know or give a bleep about basketball. I dribble heads off the floor, not a ball. There is no game here, kid." End of quote. I mean, again, where do I even start? "I dribble heads" is a great line. "There is no game here, kid." Another great line. But I'm guessing some of you are also wondering why Conor was wearing a CJ Watson jersey instead of Monte Ellis or Stack Jack or maybe even Austin Crozier. Why? Well, that's because Mayweather's former partner Josie Harris allegedly traded romantic text messages with Watson. And it reminds everybody of the incident that led to Mayweather pleading guilty to domestic violence charges. In other words, it's reminding everybody of the absolute worst in Mayweather. So McGregor's always been the very best at trolling. He's always been the very best at trolling. That's trolling 2.0. Now, is that low blow? It's not. It isn't. Hell no, it's not. If you plead guilty to domestic violence, then you cannot complain about low blows. So then Draymond jumps back in. Draymond responds saying, quote, "Ha ha 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 ha. That number won't be worn again when I'm finished with it, clown. Gold medalist, NBA champ, All-Star, DPOY, etc. Ha 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 ha! Stop it, boy! Nate Diaz, Bay Area stand-up, whooped you in your ring. Money May about to destroy you. Take that Warrior jersey off, bruh. You're an incredible internet troll. We don't rock with you. Go train, bum. End quote. Look, the truth is, this isn't about Draymond or Watson. It really is all about Money May. It's all about Mayweather. And it's about McGregor doing what McGregor does, taking his troll game to the next level. Is it going to work? It usually does. Is it going to work here? I'm not so sure. I would have said that Mayweather is just too smart for that. But then again, you see him now saying that he's going to go toe-to-toe with Conor. And you think for a minute, maybe it's working. Maybe he is getting under his skin. Maybe it's working. But you know it's not. Floyd has never really gone toe-to-toe with anybody, and now is not the time to start. Saying that he's going to turn a fight with McGregor into a brawl is not a strategy for winning a fight. It's a strategy for selling pay-per-views. A strategy for getting people to believe that Conor may actually have a chance of winning this fight. But that's not what Floyd's going to do. Why do you think he took the fight? Because he knows the only way Conor can touch him if he stands right in front of him. And that's the last thing Floyd's going to do. Something he's never done with anybody else. It's just not what Floyd does. Now, Conor, on the other hand, is doing what Conor always does. Looking to get in a guy's head, under his skin, and running some of the most legendary smack ever. I don't know that Conor can win a boxing match, but the next smack battle that this guy loses will be the first. He's the very best in the world at this. Maybe the best there ever was at that. And this is Smack Off week. But then again, for Conor, every day is the Smack Off, and he wins every single day. He dominates every single day. So your thoughts on that? That's pretty epic. Draymond and Conor going back and forth like that. Conor breaking out a 23 Warriors jersey. And then his reason for doing so. 1-800-636-8686. Doesn't matter. Is the fight going to be anywhere near as good as the battle we see on social media? And really, is there anybody who can troll better than Conor? Is there anybody who can run smack better than Conor? I'm going to say he's the best I've ever seen. The best I have ever seen. I do want to talk about Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth, to me, didn't just win a major yesterday. He won a couple. Because if he lost that one, after the way he lost the Masters last year, it would have left a scar. I mean, scar tissue a mile deep. But that's not what happened. And we'll get into that. Once again, Alan Shipnook is going to join me later on in the hour. Where are you at now, clones? Where are you at, and what do you want to talk about? It's Smack Off week. Look, you're not getting through on Friday. You're not getting through on Friday unless you're one of the chosen 30. So you may as well come in here right now. And if you've got no thoughts on what I'm talking about or what happened over the weekend, and you want to look ahead to Friday, go ahead and talk about that. If you can't be on the air on Friday, you sure can get in today and talk about Friday. 1-800-636-8686. So we've got Conor v. Draymond, Conor v. Mayweather, we have Jordan Spieth, and the Cavaliers. Stop me if you've heard this one before. The Cavaliers are having themselves a hell of an offseason, aren't they? And now come to find out, Kyrie Irving wants out. Kyrie went to Dan Gilbert and said, I'd like a trade. I don't want to be here. So, from bad to worse, it's getting worse. We'll get into that, and who's to blame? Is it the player who wants out with 2 years left on his deal? Is it the owner who ran the general manager off, who put the whole thing together? Or is it the guy who's calling all the shots, LeBron? Cavaliers are a disaster, a dumpster fire once again. They won a world championship like 5 minutes ago. So we'll get into it. Big, big surprise here. Jera, good old Jera, has got Zeke Elliott's back. No way. He doesn't think Zeke did anything wrong. No way. That story's coming up, and my thoughts on that. I do want to get into the Dodgers. You know, I'm an L.A. native. I've spent most of my life in and around that town. Yes, I'm on record as saying that this might be the best L.A. Dodgers team I've ever seen. Well, that makes the news that ace Clayton Kershaw is headed to the DL after tricking his back again even more frustrating. At least for Dodger fan. So what do they do now with the trade deadline coming up? We'll get into that. You know me, this is essentially a no LeVar, not Lonzo, LeVar Ballhouse. I just don't care about the old guy. Not into his act at all. I'd say it's a coin flip whether or not I get to his latest act, where he pulled his AAU team off the floor, a team that included his son because he got teed up and he didn't like it, in a tournament game that they were winning. At least he didn't make it about himself again. I may or may not get there. Honestly, I hope I don't. I mean, I know it's my show. I can do whatever the hell I want. I hope I don't get there. I might, but I hope not. Email number one for Monday. Hey, Rome, we don't think Conor McGregor made Draymond look stupid. Signed, thinking somebody is waving at you, you waving back, only to realize they were waving to the person behind you. Steve in PHX. Listen, Conor's gone up against the very best. Floyd Mayweather was in a class all his own when it came to running smack. Draymond, I'd argue, is pretty much in a class by himself. But if you noticed, Conor never comes out on the losing end of these battles. Not smack battles. He's got no chance to beat Floyd Mayweather. But nobody has any chance to beat him when it comes to bumping gums. This guy, he really is in a class by himself. I'm going to say he's the best I've ever seen. The best I have ever seen. Both online and off. Rome, you can already hear the likes of Brad, Mike, Vic, and Lef trying to integrate some of Conor McGregor's Instagram lines into their smack-off calls, hoping to score some points with you and the XR4TI. Signed, Caleb in Green Bay. Hey, Caleb, there's no way to score points with us. How do you think you did as well as you did? You can't, quote, score points with us based on regurgitating some of our takes. Like, hey, I get it. Rome likes Conor McGregor. Rome thinks Conor McGregor's rap is incredible. I know, I'll just regurgitate some of Conor's rap, and then Rome and the XR4TI will like that. Okay, Caleb, are you setting this up, kind of like putting it out there that you're not going to do that, and you want to put everybody on notice that you know they will do that just to curry favor with me? Do you know what scores points with me, Caleb? A good call. Good smack and a good call. Like, when you made that call, you scored points with me, and nothing you did was based on anything that I've done or said, right? And it worked. Come on, man, be better than that. You can't curry favor with the host or the voting panel, the XR4TI. The only way to get our attention and score points is to have a better call than all the other guys. 1-800-636-8686. There has been a Pablo Sandoval sighting. I've got that. Cube busting out at Wrigley. And don't look now, the Cubs are playing good baseball all of a sudden. It's something I'm probably not going to get to. Mike Phelps and the Shark. It's not Shark Week, it's Smack Off Week. The Smack Off is Friday. 1-800-636-8686. Are your calls coming up? Also, my thoughts on Jordan Spieth.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Again, the Smack Off is Friday, and it is brought to you by one of our longest standing sponsors, one of my personal favorites, Lumber Liquidators. If you want to save a boatload of cash on flooring that's going to make all your neighbors envious, check out my pals at Lumber Liquidators, and they are sponsoring the Smack Off. Now, a Shipnook's coming up at 40 past, so let me give you some thoughts of my own about yesterday. I mean, so many different numbers from Jordan Spieth winning the Open. 13, the absurd hole that changed everything. 28, one of the rules that Spieth used on 13. 24-2, another rule that he used on 13. 3, the number of majors he now has. 3, the Sunday morning lead that he quickly gave away. And 3, the number of words that he used to slam the door. Go get that. Jordan Spieth, again, to me, he didn't just win a major yesterday, he won a couple. Because if he lost that one, after the way he lost the Masters last year, that would have left a serious scar. Serious scar, and he himself admitted as much.
I put a lot of pressure on myself, unfortunately, and not on purpose, before the round today. Just thinking, you know, this is the best opportunity that I've had since the 16 Masters. And if it weren't to go my way today, then all I'm going to be questioned about and thought about and murmured about is in comparison to that. And that adds a lot of pressure to me. After four holes, it was even more so. And I was I wasn't questioning myself as a closer, but I was questioning why I couldn't just, you know, perform the shots that I was before.
Yeah, pretty much so is everybody else. I want to point out this guy's still not 24. And in an answer like that, he gave you more insight and more personality than I ever saw from Tiger Woods ever, pretty much in his entire career. But in terms of people were questioning why he could not perform the shots that he had before, yeah, pretty much. Because after starting that day with a 3-shot lead, he bogeyed 3 of the first 4 holes. So forget about a back 9 collapse. That was a front 9 implosion. And it was hard to watch. At the turn, his 37 and Matt Kuchar's 34 left them equal. Spieth was leaking oil and gas all over Royal Birkdale and filling his own head with questions and doubts and everybody else too. But then came 13. And that shank tee shot that set off a series of truly bizarre events. And that was a pretty horrible tee shot. But things just got so weird after that. It lands in the hay of the dune and was declared an unplayable lie. Rule 28, for those of you keeping score at home. Then he elects to drop further back on the same line to the flagstick, which took him to the driving range. But the direct line took him into an equipment truck, which falls under the category of temporary immovable obstructions. And then according to Rule 24-2, and it entitled him to the sightline relief. I mean, never has a series of rulings taken so long, been so important, it actually been so compelling. Lurching from one spot to the next, it had all the makings of Ray's Creek 2, or Jean Vandeveld, the sequel. And yet somehow, it never happened. Somehow, this guy didn't melt down. He came through. And never have you seen a longer, stranger, or more clutch bogey on the back nine of a major. Finishing that hole with a single putt after what felt like 5 hours on that hole was so impressive. That was so brass. That guy should have been dead. Should have been dead at that point. But somehow, he slams the paddles on himself and he goes to work. Then he plays the next 4 holes in 5-under. The 199-yard approach on 14 that almost went in. The 30-foot bird on 16. The 7-footer on 17. And of course, that epic eagle on 15 when he rolled in the monster putt, pointed at the ball in the hole, and told his caddy to go get that.
When it gets near the hole, come on, Jordan.
Get in! Get in!
You are joking. You've got to be kidding.
Go get that. Go get that. An amazing line. That was a win the major and drop the mic moment all at once. Freaking unreal reaction to an unreal putt on an unreal day. And now he's not answering questions. He doesn't have to answer questions about how it all fell apart, but rather about how he kept it all together. And now he's got a third major. And next month, he's playing for the career Grand Slam. And again, the guy's still not 24. And one hole did not change the day or the tournament, but it changed everything. And after all that talk about the next guy, maybe that next guy is standing right in front of you, Jordan Spieth, maybe. Maybe 6 foot, maybe a buck 85, if you put a couple of 10-pound dumbbells in each pocket. The guy doesn't bomb it, can barely keep it in the fairway at times, but a guy with the stones to overcome that flame out for the ages at Augusta and then pull himself out of the jet wash to win the Open. I mean, a guy who looked absolutely cooked, but finds a way to shoot the best 169 in the history of the game. A round jungle favorite elk called one of the greatest mental rounds ever. End quote. And after looking dead to rights and ready to be branded with the choker label twice in as many years, Spieth shrugs it off, mans up, and rips back the jug. What an absolute man's game performance. Jordan freaking Spieth if you need him. I can't say enough about what I saw yesterday. This email says, Jimmy, Jordan Spieth and I share the same birthday. I'm just 1 year older. He woke up and won his third major under massive pressure. I woke up slightly hung and burnt the bacon I wanted for breakfast. The dude is a freak on the links, a magician, a wizard. After the episode on 13, he could have easily collapsed. Instead, he goes birdie, eagle, birdie, cold-blooded. Colder than your girlfriend Sandra after you call her Julie. And he's only damn near 24. Stephen Eden Prairie. I remember the first time I spoke to him, and I thought to myself, God, there's no way. There's no way that guy is like 21 years old. And now he's 23, and he's almost 24. And I played that soundbite of what he had to say and what was going through his mind and how much pressure he had on himself. And like I said, this guy, he's got more insight, more personality. He gave me more in that answer than in anything I've ever heard Tiger Woods say before or after a round of golf in his entire career. I got more insight and more respect for that than anything I ever heard Woods say ever, or anything that Woods ever will say. Different guy now. Different guy. I mean, I'm not saying that he's Tiger Woods. I'm not saying that he's going to win 14 majors. I'm not saying he's going to get anywhere near there. I am saying he's already got three, and he could have a career slam right at the age of 24. But the guy's just so interesting and composed, despite what happened. In fact, not despite what happened at Augusta, but because of what happened at Augusta. To start the way that he did and not fall apart, I agree with Elk. That might have been the best mental round of golf I've ever seen. Rome, headline should read, Spieth wins on technicality. He should have been buried, but due to the bylaws of golf, which are seemingly more complex than our nation's parole hearing guidelines, Spieth, like OJ, was able to wiggle free and take his proper place on the Iron Throne. GOAT. Cam in Maine. You could say it was on technicality. I'm going to say that was one of the best mental rounds of golf I've ever seen. Guy was incredible. The rule book didn't roll that thing in from 50 feet. When we come back, we'll get a different perspective. Alan Shipnook, an SI and Golf Magazine columnist, joins us. Sports update coming up in a couple of minutes. Here is a simple truth in sports. You can be good on your own, but to be truly great, you need a team of support to take you to your true potential. That's exactly what the world-class team at Lumber Liquidators is looking to do for all the contractors, builders, and remodelers in my audience. They want to help you take your game to the next level with LL Pro Plus. It's the new pro services team that you can call for all your professional flooring needs. LL Pro Plus will help you get projects completed on schedule, provides the ultimate value and quality, and extra special professional pricing and dedicated support to get you what you need when you need it. We're pros taking care of pros, and with LL Pro Plus, no job is too large or too small. Just go to your local Lumber Liquidator store and find out more, or you can go online to lumberliquidators.com/prosales. That's lumberliquidators.com/prosales today. Now here's your sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. Cavaliers are a mess, ripping apart. And again, wasn't it like 5 minutes ago they won a world championship? We'll talk about their offseason from bad to worse. Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones says, nothing to see here. Regarding Zeke Elliott, just keep moving. As long as you say so, Jer. Those stories coming up, and I want to talk more about the Open Championship. Joining us to break it down is a senior writer at Sports Illustrated, a columnist for Golf Magazine, an author, and creator of The Knockdown. Alan Shipnook is my guest. Alan, it's good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Romy.
Always good to have you, Alan. Thanks so much. Now, you've had some time to think about it and some time to reflect upon it. So when you look back on yesterday's final round and the performance of Jordan Spieth, what stands out to you the most?
You know, it's interesting. People have always wanted to compare Spieth to Tiger Woods just because of what he's accomplished at such a young age. And I've always felt like the comparison to Phil Mickelson was a little bit better, because Spieth, there's a volatility to his game and unpredictability, kind of like Phil. You know, he can look sublime and ridiculous often during the same round. And I mean, we saw that during the final round. You know, that shot on 13 will go down as probably the worst drive any player has ever hit en route to winning a major championship. And, you know, but Jordan really married the best of both Tiger and Phil. You know, he scrambled like Phil, and then he closed like Tiger. And it was an incredible performance. It was, you know, kind of a monument to the kid's grit and his heart and his head. We know he's a talented golfer, but he has all those intangibles that really separate the very good from the very best. And that was absolutely on display yesterday. And, it puts Spieth in a whole different stratosphere. I mean, he's clearly the most important player of this current generation. I think he's usurped that title from Rory McIlroy. He's on a historic pace, whether you compare him to Tiger or Jack or anybody. And where he goes from here is really the biggest question in golf, because he could do anything at this point.
You know, there's so much in that I want to respond to, but I want to go back to your first point, Alan. Alan Shipnick is my guest. The point that he's not so much Tiger as he is Phil Mickelson. Fact of the matter is, you called that even before that round. On Saturday, he had a bogey-free 65, and you tweeted, macho round by Spieth, and it's hard to see him not winning, but he does have more Phil in him than Tiger. That volatility makes Sunday interesting. So you called it before it happened, but were you ever thinking that he would come out with three bogeys on his first four holes yesterday?
Well, and especially missing short putts. You don't expect that. But, I mean, even when Spieth won the U.S. Open at Chambers Bay, he made a god-awful double bogey on the 71st hole, which could have defined his entire reputation if he hadn't birdied the last and had Dustin hand him the trophy. I mean, obviously, we know what happened at Masters last year when he rinsed two at Rays Creek. I mean, when he was chasing the Grand Slam at the Old Course, on the 71st hole, he missed a pretty short putt, and he made two horrible swings on the last hole. And so even when he's won or he's been there in contention, he's made mistakes. And so I don't think there's ever any doubt he was going to be tested during the final round. There would be a crisis of his own making. couldn't have predicted it would be as spectacular as it was. And, you know, most players in that situation on the 13th hole would have completely panicked and lost their head. And their heart rate would have been going at about 220, and they would have made a triple bogey and blown themselves out of the tournament. I mean, for Spieth to rally and save bogey, I mean, it's probably the greatest bogey in golf history, and obviously it propelled him forward from there. So you knew it was going to happen at some point. I mean, he was never going to go out and have, you know, 17 pars and a birdie. That's just not how the kid plays. He's all over the place, and that's why he's so compelling. But it was one of the really all-time great turnabouts in the middle of a round. I mean, guys can play poorly one day and find it on the range and play well the next day. It's really hard to right the ship in the middle of a round when the whole world is watching and history is on the line. And you know, Spieth has the ability to do that. It's just incredible fortitude and focus and just kind of the ability to slow down and reset. And that, in any sport, it's hard to do that in the middle of competition. In golf, which is so internal, and where you really have no teammates, to lean on it, it's an incredible ability that he has.
And what a great point that is to make. And it's one thing, Alan Shipnick, my guest, one thing to have the best bogey ever, but just getting out of that with a bogey is one thing. But then he goes birdie, eagle, birdie, birdie. So given the situation and the circumstances, have you ever seen anything quite like that?
No, not with the stakes that high. I mean, it was just phenomenal. I mean, when he hit that tee shot on 14 and almost stuffed it next to the flag and flirted with a hole in one, you could just feel the momentum switch. Even though he was one down at that point, you started feeling sorry for Matt Kuchar, because Kuchar is the quintessential kind of soft golfer who just is not ready for a fight. And Spieth wanted to brawl. I mean, you could see in his eyes. It was almost like, you know, that bogey was like smelling salts or something, and it just woke Jordan up. And all of a sudden, you know, he gets this gunslinger look. I mean, Ben Crenshaw compared him to Wyatt Earp, and his eyes narrow, and his face gets, he just gets this look. And there's not a game face like that in golf. I mean, there's really not. You know, Tiger had it at some points, but when Spieth gets that look in his eye, you know it's coming. I mean, he's just one of those athletes who can very quickly get in the zone and do amazing things. And it's not an accident that so many of his victories have been punctuated by hole outs or long putts or spectacular moments. he has a certain magic to him that is rare in any sport, especially in golf. And he just found it at exactly the right time yesterday.
Yeah, we're talking about 15, too. I mean, what do you make of that eagle putt on 15 and then the shout of go get it to Michael Greller?
It was perfect. It's like, the thing is, he didn't even, there was no celebration. He probably just won the Open with that putt. But, you know, he's already on to the next tee. He just wants to play the next hole. He wants to keep going. It's like, Greller, get me the ball so I can hit it again. You know, I'm not ready to concede anything. And I thought that was great. I mean, that was vintage Spieth, where, you know, the whole world is losing its mind, whether it's on Twitter or in real life. And he was the coolest guy out there. Like, okay, I made an eagle. That was cool. Now I want to go make another birdie. And that's part of his fighter's mentality. You know, he was a very, very good baseball player. He was he's a lefty. You know, he's kind of like Ben Hogan. He's left-handed, but he swings a golf club right-handed. So he's got that dominant arm leading the swing, which some people think is really advantageous. But, you know, Spieth was a great baseball player. He was money as a three-point shooter playing basketball. And he grew up with some really strong athletes in Dallas, guys who played college football and college basketball. And his whole life, he hardly lost at anything. You know, they had this little core group of kids. They dominated every sport at every level. And so he's not this golf nerd who grew up in a vacuum on the driving range. I mean, he's a serious athlete and competitor. And he brings that, you know, to the fight in a way that most golfers just can't relate to. And so that's part of his competitive DNA. And he likes those situations. He's not afraid of those one-on-one matchups like he had with Kuchar. You know, you never felt like Kuchar was in his comfort zone. He was just kind of into the middle of the green and playing kind of cautious golf. And he had Spieth on the ropes, but he just couldn't land that knockout punch. He just doesn't have that same flintiness or that same hardness that Spieth does. And, you know, we obviously saw that on the closing holes.
Well, I mean, that kill or be killed mentality. So if you're Matt Kuchar, Alan, how do you feel right now? You take a one-shot lead with five holes to play. You play the next four holes in two under before you bogey 18 when it's over. Normally taking a one-shot lead with five left and following that up with a couple of birdies is enough to win. So if you are Kuchar, how do you feel right now?
Well, you just feel like you got run over by a freight train. I mean, that was... the momentum on that golf course flipped so fast. You felt like, you know, maybe Jack Nicklaus in his prime couldn't have held off Jordan, you know, the way it was going out there. But it was interesting because Kuchar just didn't put any pressure on Spieth when, you know, the quintessential moment was 13. I mean, that was the best shot that Kuchar hit all day. You know, he knocked it pretty stiff. And, of course, he got iced before the putt. You know, he had to wait forever for Spieth to play. But, you know, if Kuchar steps up and makes that birdie putt, you know, 15-footer, whatever it is. And then who knows if Spieth makes his bogey putt. You know, that's one of those match play moments where what you do can have a profound effect on your opponent. And, if you know, that was really the most important putt of Kuchar's life, given the circumstances, and he didn't make it. And, you know, you can't make every 15-footer. And as you say, he played pretty well coming down the stretch. But there was little moments where he could have answered or he could have applied a lot of pressure on Spieth, and he didn't. And that just allowed Jordan to roar home. But, you know, Kuchar doesn't have to hang his head. He played a very solid round of golf. But, you know, we witnessed something supernatural out there. And I think probably he'll shake this off and just say, there's nothing anybody could have done, including me.
All right, so if Spieth does not recover the way he did on the back nine and he loses, how different does he look today? And what's our conversation?
Oh, we're writing his obituary. I mean, the guy, you know, it was only 15 months ago that he took a five-shot lead in the back nine at the Masters and completely self-immolated, you know, some of the worst pressure shots golf has ever seen. And if he'd let this one get away, it would have been brutal. I mean, you'd have to question the guy's entire future, despite how much game he has. You know, when you throw in those other things I mentioned earlier, especially, you know, at the old course in 2015 when he couldn't get it done down the stretch there with the Grand Slam hanging in the balance. So it would have been a devastating defeat, and it would have taken him a long time. I mean, his whole brand would have changed, you know. This guy has been defined as, you know, the clutch gene and the ability to come through when it really matters. And if he'd blown that one with, you know, missing those short putts and hitting the ball off the planet and a whole series of other mistakes that he was able to kind of wash away, it would have changed the conversation dramatically. But, you know, that's the great thing about sports. I mean, if Kyrie Irving misses that shot against the Warriors, you know, it's a whole different conversation. I mean, there's these little moments where the entire reputation of a person can swing forever. And, you know, to Spieth's credit, he embraced that challenge and he came through. And now he's rightfully being celebrated for, you know, what he's done.
Alan Shipnuck, my guest. Before you go, Alan, one last thought. There was a round of 63 yesterday, the first ever 62 in a major, and that's on top of two 59s and Jim Furyk's 58 last year. What does that tell you about where golfers are relative to the golf courses they're playing right now?
Yeah, it's a really interesting moment in golf. The game has evolved so quickly. I mean, you look at Brooks Koepka, who won the U.S. Open. I mean, the guy has muscles. You know, he lives in the gym. It's become such a power game. And whether it's in the gym, it's nutritionists, it's using TrackMan to optimize their flight conditions with computers. These guys are, you know, they're 21st century athletes, and they're playing on 19th century playing fields. And the courses cannot contain the modern golfer. And in the absence of a really extreme setup or really crazy weather, they are going to destroy any golf course on the planet. I mean, the Royal Birkdale at 7,000 yards was laughably short. I mean, it was pitch and putt. And, you know, Chambers Bay last month at the U.S. Open was 7,800 yards, and Koepka absolutely ate it for breakfast and lunch. It was a joke what he reduced that golf course to. And I had this Twitter jihad all weekend saying that you need courses to be 9,000 or 10,000 yards to challenge these guys, and a bunch of people got their panties in a knot, but it's just the truth that people don't want to acknowledge how much the game has changed and how quickly. There's other ways to contain the players. I mean, you can grow thick rough and you can have narrow fairways, but then, you know, you're taking the driver out of the hands of the longest players. And is that really fair? I mean, the hardest thing in golf to do is hit the ball long and straight, and it should be rewarded, not penalized. So the game is in a funny place where they can't present a playing field that's challenging enough to the players without something. Someone's got to give. Either you take the driver out of their hand or you bank on really funky weather. And if you don't get the weather, then they're going to be shooting 60 nothings. And, you know, we saw that at Birkdale, and it's just going to continue. It's a fundamental issue that the ruling bodies are going to have to address, because they've kind of been asleep at the wheel and let the equipment and everything else kind of go crazy. And, you know, people say, well, you know, the basketball players are getting bigger and stronger, so they raise the rim. But the defense has gotten bigger and stronger, too. Same in football. You know, it's evolving on both sides of the ball. But golf, there is no defense. I mean, the course is just sitting there waiting to be taken apart by these guys. And so it's an interesting moment. 62 is going to become the norm. They're going to be shredding these golf courses going forward unless something fundamental changes within the sport.
Alan Shipnuck, senior writer at Sports Illustrated, a columnist for Golf Magazine. He is an author and creator of The Knockdown. My man, sincerely, nobody better than you. That was an unbelievable conversation. Alan, thank you so much. Great to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
That was unbelievable. That was a awesome conversation. Alan Shipnuck, all right, your thoughts on that? Do you have an issue with it? And we could talk all we want about Jordan Spieth, and we will, but I love that last topic. When you see guys going as low as they are right now, should something be done to the courses or even the equipment? Are you going to take a driver out of a guy's hand? Are you going to penalize him? Or are you all right with these low numbers? Because they're low. A 63 yesterday. The first ever 62 in a major. On top of a couple of 59s. Jim Furyk had a 58. And like he said, 62 is now the new normal. All right, we're wide open. Joel Sherman next hour. Carlos Dansby in hour number 3. It is Smack Off Week. Stay with it. Today's an ATP day, too. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. This is CBS Sports Radio.